The Israeli genocide claims more civilian lives across Gaza as the regime continues to pound Palestinian homes, UN-run shelters, hosting two major international parliamentary events to discuss ways to stop Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. And also in our headlines, UN experts condemn Israel's killing of Hamas Deputy Chief Saleh al-Aruri, saying his assassination amounts to the crimes of extrajudicial killing and murder. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, more than 3 months into the Israeli genocide in Gaza, the regime continues with its carpet bombing campaign across the besieged territory. In the southern Gaza Strip, 15 members of a family were killed in the regime's latest airstrikes in Rafah. The city of Khan Yunis, which hosts thousands of displaced Palestinians, also remains a main target of the regime's relentless attacks. Several Gazans were injured at a UN-run school when the Israeli drones opened live fire on Palestinians taking shelter there. The city's Nasser Hospital and its vicinity have also come under heavy Israeli fire. In central Gaza, Israeli warplanes shelled civilian areas near Al-Maghazi and Nusayrat refugee camps, resulting in a number of casualties. In the north, residential areas in Deir al-Bala and Jabalia were pounded as well. The overall death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza has reached 23,210, mostly women and children. Meanwhile, Palestinian fighters are putting up stiff resistance against Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip, inflicting more losses on invading troops. The military wing of Hamas says it targeted a group of Israeli occupation forces in Gaza City, killing and injuring a number of them. Al-Qassam Brigade says that it captured Skylark drone in the city. Qassam fighters also struck several Israeli military vehicles, including Merkava tanks. The military wing of Islamic Jihad says that it downed an Israeli spy drone. Al-Quds Brigade says its forces targeted Israeli occupation forces troops in Khan Yunis with mortar shells. In the meantime, the Israeli regime has admitted that at least 9 of its soldiers were killed and several more were injured in the Gaza Strip on Tuesday. The regime has so far confirmed the loss of 182 soldiers since the onset of its ground invasion. Resistance groups, however, say that Israel is underreporting its casualties. Iran is simultaneously hosting two major parliamentary events on Palestine to discuss ways to stop Israeli crimes against Palestinians. There will be the fifth emergency meeting of the Permanent Committee on Palestine of the Parliamentary Union of the Member States of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Also, Tehran is hosting the first meeting of the Palestine Committee of the Asian Parliamentary Assembly. Both events bring together parliament speakers and vice speakers from 26 Islamic and Asian countries. High on the agenda is the Israeli regime's genocidal war on Gaza. Well, joining us now to offer us further insight on the significance of this interparliamentary session that's taking place in Tehran, we have Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation, Pakistan, Mr. Sabir Abu Maryam, who's joining us from Karachi. Mr. Abu Maryam, welcome to the program. Let's jump right in and give us your thoughts on the significance of this interparliamentary session that's taking place in Tehran in support of Palestine.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to appreciate and congratulate the government of Iran and the leadership of Islamic Republic of Iran to holding the fifth emergency session of the permanent members of the parliamentary union in the members' countries in the OIC. And also, side by side, I heard the news that that Tehran is holding another session about the Asian Parliamentary Assembly to supporting Palestine. These two sessions are very important because in these days we are observing and we are hearing the news that the killers of children in Gaza, especially the Blinken, who is the Secretary of Foreign Affairs in the United States government, he visited many regimes and met with the Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, and others. And also, he was in Tel Aviv with the Zionist Netanyahu and all the killers are gathered, and they are trying to manipulate the facts of Gaza. Even they didn't admit the genocide which has been occurred with the support of U.S. regime by the hands of Zionist regime. This conference, which is held in Iran on today, it is very important and most significant in the current era, because we know very well that the efforts of Iran government and the people of Iran, those have the history of sacrifices for the Palestinian cause, and this step may strengthen the cause of Palestine, and it is a hopeful for the people of Palestine, for the people of Gaza. Especially, we are hopeful that because now Iran is leading around the globe, and especially in the Muslim nations, which is a positive sign for all the Muslim Ummah. Especially in Pakistan, we feel proud that the real supporters are carrying and leading to step forward for the ceasefire in Gaza. I hope after this conference, when it will be finished, probably yes, of course, the resolution may be adopted, and this resolution must be strong, I hope. And the ceasefire and the rebuild of Gaza and many other important issues we have to address in Gaza. The first most important issue is to permanent ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, and to must punish the Zionist regime for the violation of humanity, for the violation of human rights, for the violation of international law, international norm, everything, for violation of humanitarian and humanity. As we are witness that more than 25,000 people has been killed by the Zionist regime in Gaza, and even Israel has attacked in Lebanon, in Syria. Also, we had news a few days ago in Kerman, the double terror attack, suicidal attacks on the civilian, innocent civilians of Iran. So these kind of terrorism, which is globally supported by the U.S. regime and Israel, this conference, I hope, this is the hope for maybe adopt a resolution to punish the Zionist regime, to punish the U.S. government, who is supporting these all crimes and terrorist attacks. Even in Yemen, the 10 naval officers were being martyred by the U.S. attack. So this conference is very important, and we are hopeful in Pakistan, because Iran is the real supporter and the real leader for the cause of Palestine. And Iran has history since 1979, as many sacrifices, many things faced due to supporting the Palestine, but never stepped back. So this is hopeful, and we appreciate from Pakistan, and we are hopeful this conference will be strengthened to the cause of Palestine, and must pressurize to the global, to the UN and to the US regime, especially for the ceasefire in Gaza Strip.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has hailed Palestinians for their steadfastness in the face of the ongoing US-Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the resistance of some 2 million people in a small territory has frustrated the U.S. and Israeli regime dependent on Washington. He also said that the Israeli regime has reached none of its goals after committing nearly 100 days of crimes in Gaza. Ayatollah Khamenei also touched upon the necessity to find those who were involved in a deadly terror attack in the Iranian city of Kerman on January the 3rd. The leader called on Iranian officials to bring to... Ayatollah Khamenei was addressing a gathering on the anniversary of the historic uprising of the people of the holy city of Rome about a year before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The leader said the uprising paved the way for the overthrow of the then tyrant regime. Iran's foreign minister says that Washington is laying the groundwork for a wider military presence in the region by drafting an anti-Yemen resolution at the UN Security Council. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark in a phone call with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov. He emphasized the importance of the international maritime security, but pointed out that the recent developments in the Red Sea are only an outcome of and a reaction to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Lavrov, for his part, referred to the U.S. full support for the Israeli onslaught in Gaza, saying Americans are not interested in resolving the root causes of crises. The Yemeni army has in recent weeks launched attacks on several Israeli-owned and Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. It says the attacks are in retaliation for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. An international advocacy group for children has described 2023 as a year of genocide for children in Palestine, where at least 8,000 kids have been killed by Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. Defense for Children International has called unprecedented the rate of the children killed by the Israeli regime in Gaza. It says the number of casualties among Gaza children is expected to rise significantly due to the nonstop Israeli bombardment of civilian infrastructure and the high number of children who were still unaccounted for. According to the group, in the occupied West Bank, at least 121 Palestinian children were killed in attacks by Israeli forces last year. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Ministry of Education has said that the number of slaughtered Palestinian students has surpassed 4,200. Rather, the ministry added 84 students have been killed and hundreds more injured in the West Bank since the onset of the Israeli genocide on October the 7th. UN experts have condemned the Israeli regime over its assassination of Hamas deputy chief Salah al-Aruri on Lebanese soil. They say such killings amount to the crimes of extrajudicial killing and murder. The two UN special rapporteurs have in a statement deplored killing of resistance fighters in foreign territory. They emphasize that there was no legal basis for geographically unlimited attacks targeting the members of an armed resistance group wherever they are. The UN experts argue that Israel's assassination of the Hamas official was not an act of self-defense and that the Israeli regime did not provide any evidence al-Aruri was conducting armed attacks against Israel. Salah al-Aruri was killed last week in an Israeli drone attack in southern Beirut. Hamas has vowed revenge for the assassination, saying the crime will not break the resolve of the Palestinians in their battle against the Zionist enemy. World Health Organization officials have spotlighted the desperate humanitarian crisis currently unfolding in Gaza. A representative based in Gaza says a huge number of Gazans have been directly affected by the war.
Based on the latest figures from the Ministry of Health, so we are currently talking about more than 23,000 fatalities, of which 70% women and children. So that is actually 1%. You talked about 1% of the population in Gaza. We also talk about almost 59,000 people injured, which is close to 2.7% of the total population. So then you're talking about 3.5% of a population very much affected, directly affected.
Another WHO representative says they're witnessing the health system collapsing at a very rapid pace.
We're seeing a humanitarian catastrophe unfold before our eyes here across the Gaza Strip. It's not just that there's 85% of the population that has been displaced. Many of them have been displaced multiple times. Here in Rafah, where I am, there's shelters, spontaneous shelters everywhere. People are sleeping under tarpaulins, under makeshift tents, in very crowded shelters. And at the same time, we're seeing this humanitarian catastrophe unfold before our eyes. We're seeing the health system collapse at a very rapid pace.
Sean Casey also voiced concern about the possible collapse of hospital provisions in southern and central Gaza. He said that patients were risking their lives to get to hospitals in the southern city of Khan Yunis because of the ongoing fighting. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has categorically denied Israeli media claims that the regime has assassinated head of the movement's drone unit. Hezbollah said in a statement that Israel's claim was completely unfounded. The movement affirmed the head of its drone unit has not been targeted by an assassination attempt. This after earlier on Tuesday, the movement said it had targeted an Israeli military base with kamikaze drones. The attack took place in the city of Safad in northern occupied Palestinian territories. Hezbollah said The strike was to avenge the assassination of its senior commanders by Israel. The movement added that it also targeted an Israeli military base in the town of Hanita and several other Israeli positions. Areas along Lebanon's southern border have been the scene of intensified exchanges of fire between Hezbollah and Israel since the regime began its bloody onslaught on Gaza back in October. Hezbollah leader Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has repeatedly warned the Israeli regime against launching a full-scale war on Lebanon. And thousands of mourners have attended a funeral held for a senior Hezbollah commander recently slain in southern Lebanon. Lebanese mourners attending the procession have emphasized their support for the Hezbollah resistance movement in face of Israeli atrocities. Let's take a listen to some of them.
As in Ait al-Shaab, the Israeli occupation tried to intimidate the crowd of mourners, but the mourners didn't care and ignored the provocation. Rather, more people came to take part in the funeral as a challenge to the Zionist enemy, even though several drones were flying over the crowd who came to mourn martyr Wissam al-Tawil.
My message is that we will never be afraid, because to stop is to betray our martyrs. We will continue to resist until the last breath and the last generation to remove Israel from the map and hold our prayers in Al-Quds, as promised by our leader, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. We won't be humiliated and will continue to live with pride and dignity under the leadership of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The collective hardship experienced by Gaza's female prisoners in Israel is unprecedented even within the tragic history of the Zionist regime's treatment of Palestinian prisoners. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote the names of 51 female prisoners kidnapped by invading Israeli regime forces during their ground operation in Gaza have been revealed. This number was announced by the Palestinian Prisoners Affairs Authority in a statement, without confirming whether there are other female prisoners secretly abducted by the Zionist regime. Regardless of the exact number, however, the testimonies that were collected from released prisoners, several shocking abuse, ill-treatment, and torture. The Palestine Chronicle spoke with Lama Khater from Al-Khalil, who was abducted on October 26 and released under prisoner exchange deal between the Zionist regime's government and the Palestinian resistance on November 30. Khater was abducted along with 10 female prisoners from Gaza and was witnessing the abuse they were subjected to. Qatar said the conditions of female prisoners from Gaza were particularly difficult, starting with their kidnapping during their displacement from the northern Gaza Strip. She stressed, they were arrested randomly, mostly from the northern Gaza Strip. Israeli soldiers detained mothers too, who have been forced to leave their children with passers-by. Qatar recounted that before arriving at Damon Prison, the female detainees were left without covers, subjected to humiliating strip searches, and forced to sleep on the bare floor. When they were brought into prisons, they were blindfolded, handcuffed, and deprived of their hijab, said Qatar. They were reportedly placed in narrow cells in Damon Prison and not allowed to speak to the rest of the female prisoners from the occupied West Bank and Palestine 48. Qatar said, all female prisoners are subjected to great restrictions, but the prisoners from Gaza were treated even worse. For example, they are only allowed to shower in large groups of at least 50 women and for not more than 15 minutes a day. Qatar said that on December 10th and 11th, five female prisoners from the Gaza Strip were taken out of Damon Prison. Their current location is not yet known. Among the female Gazan prisoners, some are in a particularly difficult state. An 80-year-old woman who suffers from Alzheimer and a pregnant woman, both are subjected to medical negligence. The Palestine Chronicle also spoke with Palestinian lawyer Hassan al-Abadi, who collected the testimonies of several female prisoners in Damon. Al-Abadi, who volunteered to visit the female prisoners, submitted his first request to the Zionist regime's prison administration on November 30, but was told in response that there were no longer female prisoners in the detention facility. A few days later, however, media reports revealed that dozens of female prisoners from Gaza, Al-Quds, and Palestine 48 were still held there. Al-Abadi confirmed to the Palestine Chronicle that there are over 40 female prisoners from Gaza in the facility, but they are prohibited from seeing a lawyer, he said. When I would visit any female prisoner from the West Bank or Al-Quds, she would tell me about the harsh conditions of detention of the prisoners from the Gaza Strip. Al-Abadi said he was particularly disturbed by the way the Zionist regime forces transported the female detainees from Gaza to the prisons. According to the lawyer, they were placed in trucks carrying cages similar to those used for animal transport. Al-Abadi said, this detail particularly hurt me. These women have been transported in animal trucks. They have been tied, blindfolded, and stripped of their head covering as a way to humiliate them. The lawyer also said that when the female detainees arrived at the prison, their clothes were stained with blood. Most of them were also bleeding from their hands, as the plastic chains have been tightly tied around their wrists for days. Upon their arrival, they were distributed into three rooms, each containing six iron beds. Most of them were reportedly forced to sleep on the floor without pillows or mattresses. Al-Abadi said the prisoners told me that the food is also very bad and that the Israeli guards deliberately leave it on their cell door for hours until it turns cold. The water has a rusty taste as well. The female detainees from Gaza are even forbidden from talking to the rest of the prisoners, and they have to communicate in secret. Al-Abadi shared that one of the women had to leave her four children in Gaza. The eldest was only 8 years old, the youngest an infant. According to the testimony from other prisoners, the woman was walking on Salahuddin Street fleeing from the north of the Gaza Strip when the Israeli regime troops kidnapped her. Al-Abadi said when she learned that she would be under arrest, she immediately handed her children to a boy who was walking in the street and told him to take care of them. I learned from the other prisoners that she asked about her children every day, crying inconsolably, but nobody was updating her on their fate. A few days ago, however, Al-Abadi was able to deliver a verbal message to this woman that her children had eventually reached their father. He said, this time she cried out of joy. Al-Abadi said these women are not only suffering due to the extremely cruel conditions of their detention, but because they are constantly concerned about their families. They do not know the fate of their children as the Zionist regime continues to relentlessly bombard Gaza. Al-Abadi explained they are not allowed to hear the news or follow what is happening anyway. They are isolated from the outside world and don't know anything. But there are other forms of violation carried out by the Israeli regime authorities. Al-Abadi told us that the prison administration prevents these women from bringing along the necessary things. Therefore, they only have what they were wearing at the time of arrest. The Zionist regime considers men and women detained in the Gaza Strip to be prisoners of war under the so-called unlawful combatants law. Therefore, it prevents them from having contact with lawyers and human rights organizations.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
For almost 100 days, Palestinians in Gaza have been fighting back Israeli occupation forces who have ruined most of the tiny coastal sliver, killing more than 23,000 people, mainly women and children. Now, Tel Aviv's closest ally, Washington, has directly engaged in the ethnic cleansing and lending full support, be it monetary or military hardware and intelligence. Secretary of State Blinken just had a tour of West Asia, meeting with a number of ranking officials there, discussing genocidal war in Gaza and the future of the Palestinian land. The fact of the matter is that, in words, American officials criticize targeting civilians in Gaza, but in action, they give the IOF soldiers weapons to do just that and even more. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests in this episode. Rick Sterling, investigative journalist, is joining me from Walnut Creek, California. Nicholas J.S. Davis, independent journalist and author of The Blood on Our Hands, is also joining us out of Miami.
is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show, gentlemen. Now, let me begin with Rick, if I may, that there are many analysts, Rick, arguing that it's not possible for the Tel Aviv regime to continue with the crimes against Palestinians without the backing of the U.S. and, of course, involvement. And yesterday we had President Biden making this speech in a church in South Carolina where he was heckled. There were some people interrupted him by shouting, "If you really care about loss of lives you're talking about, okay, let's have ceasefire in Gaza now." So to begin, let's review the U.S. president's performance vis-a-vis the U.S.-managed Israeli war on the Gaza Strip.
Well, of course, Israel could not continue the this war without support from the U.S. The U.S. has provided over 25,000 bombs and 57,000 artillery shells. Israel has dropped, over the first 89 days, they had dropped over 65,000 tons of bombs. This war could not continue without the U.S. support. And very sadly and unfortunately, Joe Biden right at the start said that Israel is going to get whatever it needs, and he's enacted this. The U.S. is completely complicit and a collaborator in this genocide.
Now, Nicholas, protesters in U.S. cities and also on social media recently, they've been calling President Biden Genocide Joe, and also that was repeated in this church speech yesterday. They said that Genocide Joe, do you have the blood of more than 20,000 Palestinians on your hand? Does he deserve such a name?
Absolutely. I think the problem for the U.S. is really one of public relations, and it's the way people around the world see it. The United States is guilty of killing far more civilians than have been killed in Gaza, in all of its wars, in Mosul, in Iraq. An Iraqi Kurdish intelligence report estimated the civilian dead at 40,000, and that, as in Gaza, was not counting many more thousands buried under the rubble. Raqqa, I've never seen an actual estimate of civilian dead in Raqqa, but by many accounts, Raqqa was more completely destroyed even than the center of Mosul. So the United States government, whether it's under Bush or Obama or Trump or Biden, has no problem with killing tens of thousands of civilians. What they do have a problem with is, whereas in their own wars, they skillfully are able, through control of the media, to prevent global awareness of just how many civilians they are really killing. In this case, the whole world is watching in horror as Israel uses American weapons to kill tens of thousands of civilians. And that is a public relations political problem for the American government.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rick, there is a poll that indicates that 70% of young Americans do not approve of Joe Biden's policy on this war on Gaza. The question is why he should defy people's demands.
Well, it's because of Zionist influence in Washington, sadly. You know, 70 or 75% of the American public supports a ceasefire, and yet in Congress it's something like 15%. And that is because of the influence of the Israel lobby in Congress with congressional representatives and senators. It's a sad state of affairs and reflective of the, you know, the lack of democracy in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And Nicholas, let's now take a look at what Secretary of State Antony Blinken's been doing. He was on a tour of the Middle East, as you know, and he's met with a number of officials in the region. Now, he's saying that he opposes the Israeli ministers who are calling for the people in Gaza to be forced outside of their homeland, to be, in their words, resettled, so that they could make room for Israeli settlers to go and occupy their lands and make parks and all of that. You know, they said there are 2.2 million people. Okay, let's have 2 million people out. Just stay. Let's keep some 200,000 inside. So Blinken is also saying that civilian lives must be protected and enough is enough and all that jazz. But just last week, we saw another multi-billion dollar in aid allocated to this Israeli genocide in Gaza. Dichotomy, double standard, what is this?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, at the beginning of the whole massacre, the United States sent Marine Major General James Glynn, who took part in the U.S. massacres in Fallujah and Mosul, to advise the Israelis on their operation in Gaza. Mm-hmm. So there's complete continuity between, you know, U.S. war crimes and Israeli ones. But on the question of actually killing and driving out the population of Gaza, the genocide of the people of Gaza, which, of course, the International Court of Justice is taking up Thursday. The U.S., of course, this is, again, it's embarrassing to the United States. Of course, the United States, like Israel, is dismissing the charge of genocide, saying, oh, don't be absurd, you know, this can't be genocide. It's the Israelis, for God's sake. But the denials from the U.S. are transparent. A bunch of journalists, including Ryan Grimm, confronted the State Department spokesman, Matt Miller, about the statements by the Israeli officials, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. And of course, Matt Miller insisted that, you know, this is not Israeli policy. These people are speaking out of turn. But, of course, the U.S. intelligence cannot be unaware that literally a few days earlier, Netanyahu himself at a Likud party meeting had said that that was exactly his plan, and that the only, and in fact he said he wanted to give the people of Gaza a choice between leaving or staying and being killed, and he then told Danny Danon, the former Israeli UN ambassador, the problem is not that we don't want to do this, the problem is that we have so far have not found any country that will accept the 2 million refugees from Gaza.
Mm-hmm. Rick, during his recent tour of this region, can talk to some Arab leaders to encourage them to get along with Tel Aviv regime. He also talked to Benjamin Netanyahu regarding the post-war governance structure in Gaza. What's the purpose of his visits in your opinion, and what has the future of Palestine got to do with the U.S.?
Well, I think to some extent they're covering for Israel. To some extent the U.S. Does not want a wider war at this time, and they are concerned about the Israel and Netanyahu possibly intentionally provoking a larger conflict. So I think there's an element of it that wants to, you know, put the damper on the most extreme elements in Israel. But what's going on right now, we all, you know, owe thanks to the South Africans for filing the petition at the International Court of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's not coincidence that just a couple of days ago, Israel said that they are entering a new phase and it's going to be less intense with less ground troops and less bombing. And I think that's a direct result. I think the U.S. is also concerned because it's even organizations such as Save the Children and UNICEF are reporting that over 1,000 children have had one or two limbs amputated.
Right.
And this is sometimes without anesthesia. So in some respects, this is a war on children. So the information, the news, the publicity about the reality of the war on the ground is getting out a lot through social media and through alternative media such as Press TV.
Mm-hmm. Now, Nicholas, Rick mentioned the South Africa case. You know, apart from devising policies and drawing extra roadmaps, Washington has done much more to help the Israeli occupation forces continue committing their crimes against Palestinians unhindered. And one example is this, that the U.S. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby called the South African lawsuit against Israel at the ICJ, I'm quoting him, meritless, counterproductive, and completely without any basis, in fact, whatsoever. I want your take on that, please. And how can justice be served?
Yes, absolutely. The I think it would be very hard for the International Court of Justice to rule that this is not a genocide. Between all the statements of intent and the South Africa in applying for this case, included an 84-page document. Documenting what Israel is doing, and also 10 pages quoting what Israeli leaders say they are doing. As we have discussed, they are talking openly that they want to kill or expel the people of Gaza from their homeland. And so, really, I think there's a real chance here that the ICJ will, in fact, rule against Israel under the Genocide Convention, and the first provisional measure that South Africa has asked them to take is to order a ceasefire, to order the Israelis to end their military operation in Gaza. Now, with the U.S. as an integral part of this operation, absolutely complicit with Israel in the genocide, even though the United States has not actually been named as a target of the South African case, this is going to be, you know, just almost unprecedented global public relations problem for the United States, if in fact the court orders Israel to stop. Because, you know, is Israel going to stop? I don't think so. Israel has signaled again and again and again that, it takes all the U.S. actions simply as a green light, and it essentially ignores calls from around the world to stop killing Gazans. So then we will have a situation with the U.S. backing an operation that the International Court of Justice has openly in front of the whole world called a genocide. And this is I don't know where this is going to go in terms of U.S. relations with countries all over the world. This almost nothing that the U.S. or Israel has been able to do for the last 25 years, no matter how many people they have killed in all their wars, that the U.S., with its huge economic and military power, has somehow seemed, you know, completely immune to the rule of international law. Its officials enjoy blanket impunity, And nothing so far has really, even as more countries in the world trade more with China than with the United States, that the economic basis of American power is dwindling away, and yet its ships patrol the oceans of the world, its troops occupy 800 military bases around the world, and countries have been reluctant to to sever their relations with the American Empire. I think this, what is happening today in Gaza, is so public, it is so recognized by people and governments all over the world. Over 150 countries voted in the General Assembly to call for a ceasefire. Exactly. And the United States is facing a crisis in its, a historic crisis for its imperial ambitions.
Yeah, 150 countries voted for that. The U.S. vetoed a couple of pushes at the Security Council. They say enough of civilian lives, protect them, and then the vetoes resolutions for a ceasefire. Rick, what about the ICJ? I just wanted to ask you, can we be hopeful that justice will finally be served, no matter who's, because this is genocide. Many countries are also joining this. They're pitching in, they're standing behind South Korea's push. Can we get something out of ICJ and see justice served?
I think the South African initiative is gaining increasing support. Even within the United States, there are organizations that are campaigning and appealing to foreign governments and foreign embassies in Washington and New York at the United Nations to support the South African petition. Yes, I think the International Court of Justice is important. I think the decision they had in 1985 by Nicaragua against the U.S. For the U.S. Funding and promoting and creating a proxy army to attack Nicaragua and attack Nicaraguan courts. The ICJ finding in support of Nicaragua was very important. And I think this case can be even more important, potentially, gaining public support. And as I was saying earlier, we could already see a little impact that already Israel is saying they're going to, they're calling it the next phase, and they're reducing the attack will be less intense. I think it's really incumbent and essential that public supporters of Palestine step up the support of the petition and make it public. John Mearsheimer had a very good piece the other day talking about how important that is. So it does make a difference. And as Nicholas was saying, the U.S. Domination of the globe is waning very fast. And I think we can see that at the United Nations, where the U.S. is increasingly isolated in its support of Israel. Mm-hmm. So we need to just step up the opposition, both at home and internationally.
All right. Nicholas, let's take a look at U.S. aid for Israel. A little history. Tel Aviv has received the highest amount of military aid in comparison to any other U.S. ally since the Second World War. The aid has exceeded $124 billion, and Washington provided Tel Aviv with so-called bunker buster bombs that are being used in the war on Gaza. So couldn't Washington have spent this money, on the home turf? Isn't there any other needs at home, to address, like maybe the very old and dilapidated collapsing infrastructure, for instance?
Yes, I think people in the United States even will look back on this period as absolutely tragic for the United States and its people. At the end of the Cold War, we hailed a peace dividend. We were promised a peace dividend. But unfortunately, at that point, the neocons emerged to dominate U.S. foreign policy, and essentially instead turned the peace dividend into a power dividend. They decided that the United States should take advantage of the lack of peer competitors in the world to expand its power and to use military power openly in clear violation of international law and the UN Charter to attack any countries that stood in its way, whether Afghanistan or Iraq or, you know, before that, Yugoslavia. And, you know, we have seen complete flagrant disregard for international law by the United States, spending, it's now close to $1 trillion a year on its military spending.
Okay, unfortunately, gentlemen, we're out of time.
Complete waste of U.S. resources.
Okay, I'm so sorry for jumping in. We're out of time. Let me thank my guests, Rick Sterling in Walnut Creek, California, Nicholas J.S. Davis in Miami, Florida.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Al-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi'a al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam. Translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat ad-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.